This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. Well, we have a result in the Hartlepool by-election and the Conservatives have won with a remarkable 16% swing from Labour. James, this is a crisis for Keir Starmer as Labour leader, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, what this result shows and the sheer size of the Labour defeat, you know, this is the biggest increase in a governing party's vote share in a by-election in the post-war era, is that Keir Starmer hasn't stopped the bleeding in the red wall for Labour. Indeed, the situation appears to be going backwards still further. And I think what this shows is that I think some people in the Labour Party rather hoped that 2019 was a kind of almost a freak result driven by voters' desire to kind of get Brexit done and their fear of Jeremy Corbyn. Brexit is now, you know, in inverted commas, done. Jeremy Corbyn has departed the stage. Keir Starmer's made a big thing about Labour being under new management. And Labour are still going backwards in these places. Now, as you said on this podcast yesterday, lots of Labour people are saying, look, voters aren't as angry as us as they were before. But what's quite clear is that even if voters aren't angry, they see no positive reason to vote for Labour. And I think part of the challenge here for Labour is, you know, where do they go? You know, the Tories have just paid the wages of 11 million workers via the furlough scheme. The half the population just received their first dose of the vaccine. Obviously, these are propitious circumstances for the government, but it suggests that this Tory government is going to come out of the kind of current COVID crisis stronger than it went into it. And you also add the fact that the Bank of England and Goldman Sachs both think that the British economy is going to grow faster this year than it has in any year since 1945. And it's hard to see how that doesn't create an economic feel-good factor. And I think this shows you the sheer size of the mountain Labour have to climb. And one other thing to watch is we are also beginning to see an uptick in the Green vote. The Greens are beginning to replace the Lib Dems as the third party in England. And I think that is a worry for Labour because the danger for Keir Starmer is that the blocs, the Hull and Hampstead, you know, Labour electoral coalition, are just moving further and further apart from each other. And so, but if he tries to do more to win back voters in places such as Hartlepool, he risks alienating more of his metropolitan base in places like London and Bristol, where everyone just takes it for granted that Labour will win the mayoralties. So I think you see Keir Starmer trying to hold together a fragmenting coalition and really struggling to do that. And I think you can see this already, as Katie has said on Coffee House this morning. You know, he is getting unsolicited advice from all factions of the Labour Party. And I mean, this is the danger for him, is that he ends up a bit like Theresa May did with the Tory party during Brexit, trying to preside over a coalition that wants to go in completely opposite ways and kind of left standing there in the middle, trying to referee an internal factional fight.
Katie, Labour frontbenchers have been very bold in their analysis this morning, saying it's shattering, heartbreaking, and that the party has not changed enough for voters to come back to it. This is obviously the Keir Starmer line, and his allies are very keen to say that he is taking responsibility for this. He's not, you know, blaming the weather or the media as the party has done previously. But this line about the party needing to change more, is that him saying, do you think, that the party is resisting his attempts at changing, or is it him saying that he's not doing enough to change the party?
It's an interesting one, because obviously I think everyone agrees the party needs to change, but no one agrees on what particular direction. I think when Keir Starmer shows the party needs to change more, I get the sense that they are alluding to this analogy they often give, saying, you know, Labour has a mountain to climb, we're at base camp, and, you know, this is a journey we're already on, and we've got to keep going on that journey because it was always going to be a long-term project. So I don't personally get the sense that it's Keir Starmer saying we're going to massively deviate from what I was saying, so much as, you know, we always said this was going to take a long time. Look at successive Labour defeats, look what we inherited, even though I'm saying I'm taking responsibility, and this is not a short-term thing, so stick with us because we're slowly working it. And as James mentioned and you've mentioned previously, this thing you keep hearing saying, well, they're less angry of us voters, you know, we're getting a bit there. Does that hold? I think that we're seeing from the interventions on both sides how it's a difficult line to hold, and perhaps Keir Starmer's going to flesh out what he means when he says, oh, we have to change more, because I think there is a sense that if it's just change in the sense that he is taking the party on a journey that is currently, you know, step two of step 11 steps on, I'm not convinced that's going to satisfy both sides. And you're hearing, for example, you know, Lloyd Russell Moyle. Now, that is a left-wing Labour MP who I don't think has a huge number of fans in the parliamentary party, but he's been the one who's on social media earlier ultimately criticising, saying, is this what the patriotism strategy and waving flags really gets us? And has since been sharing his thoughts with the world, saying that, you know, Keir Starmer wants to be British Biden, he should actually learn from the US Democrats, where policies united the party, the left was brought into the top table, not ignored or beaten up on. I think that is a taste of the debate we're about to get. Now, lots of people saying, well, Keir Starmer's in lots of trouble. Is he safe in his position? I think the general sense is his leadership is not in trouble in the sense that he will be in this position. If you look at the MPs on the left, there's a sense it's not actually enough to do a successful leadership challenge. There's not that appetite on the other side. The Labour right and the centre of the party will not want to risk that again. So I don't think we're there at all. But I think, as James is touching on, we're about to see Keir Starmer pressed to go further. And the MPs and the supporters on the right of the party are already out. Similar line to Keir Starmer, saying how, you know, there's a long way to go, but a bit harder in the sense saying almost you need to stop trying to focus on making the party one and bringing in the left into everything and actually take bolder steps. One figure I was speaking to saying, well, you know, the idea that people in Hartlepool were saying, oh, we're not going to vote for Labour this time because you've got rid of Corbyn, you know, it's a fantasy. And I think it's that kind of sentiment. I don't see how the two sides can be reconciled. And the problem is they're both hardening in their position, saying, well, you need to ignore that side. No, you need to ignore that side to fix it. So I think it's going to get quite messy for Keir Starmer. And just finally, again, talk of, yeah, he should do a shadow cabinet reshuffle. He should move around his backroom team. But again, everyone's saying that, but everyone wants different things from that exercise.
And James, Starmer has not really shown a great ability to either ignore different factions in his party or to sort of work out a way of taking a particular stand, has he? I mean, throughout his, not just his leadership so far, but also when he was shadow Brexit secretary, his emphasis was always very much on let's try and keep the party together, let's sort of plot a middle way, not a third way, just to be clear. So do you think he's going to be able to pick a side, or is he, as you say, going to be in a sort of push-me-pull-you situation where he's just being battered around by different factions within the party?
I think the bet that Keir Starmer took when he became Labour leader was that kind of oppositions don't win elections, governments lose them. So all of his critique of the Tories was a competence critique. And in the autumn, when government approval of its handling of coronavirus was down at kind of 30%, that did seem like it might be a viable strategy. And it's worth remembering at the turn of the year, Labour were level with the Tories in the polls or sometimes ahead. The problem he's been hit by is the vaccination programme. The public see as, you know, competence, right? And the UK is ahead of European countries, one of the leading countries in the world on vaccination. And it's very hard to say these guys are incompetent, they don't know what they're doing, when people see this vaccination programme, which is, you know, running very smoothly, NHS doing a remarkable job. And I think this is the challenge for him, is that he hasn't developed his own prospectus. He ran for leader basically telling the Labour Party you could have kind of Corbynism without Corbyn, minus some of the personal baggage, but all the policies. As leader, he basically moved very quickly to distance himself in policy terms as well as personality terms from Corbynism. But he hasn't put anything in its place. And his critique of the government has all been competence-based. And even now, the sleaze attack is a kind of variation on that theme. And it's not clear what Starmer's Labour Party stands for. You know, we all do this for a living, right? But if I think, don't worry, I'm not going to do this, but if I turn around to you two and said, tell me about Keir Starmer's first 100 days, what are the five pieces of legislation he would do? You know, I don't think that you guys would be able to answer. And that's not because because of any failing on your part, but because simply because Keir Starmer
this
has...
It's a relief.
Because Keir Starmer has not articulated what this is. And Katie talked about a shadow cabinet reshuffle. There's lots of talk of sacking Annalise Dodds, the shadow chancellor. You know, but I think when you do things like this as leader of the opposition, it actually suggests that you're not cutting through. Because, you know, the Labour Party has lots of problems, and you can argue that, you know, maybe Yvette Cooper in that role would be more effective. But it's hard to say that the biggest problem the Labour Party has right now is Annalise Dodds. And it is also the other problem for Keir Starmer is, you know, she was very much his choice. It wasn't like she came second in the leadership contest and he had to give her that job. He took a punt on giving her that job. And he was trying to create a shadow cabinet in his own image of competent Labour Fabians. And that is clearly not cutting the mustard right now. And I think this is where the Hartlepool result comes in again, which is, I think Labour were resigned to losing the seat and have been for quite some time. I don't think people within the Labour Party were resigned to losing by the margin that they lost by.
And we've been talking in this podcast as though there's just been one result. We are expecting a slew of results, Katie, today, tomorrow, Sunday and Monday. So what can we expect at least today?
So we've already got some more of the council results in, and I think, again, we're seeing this trend, which I think is very encouraging to the Tory party across the country, where the Tories are making gains from Labour. You have Amanda Milling, the party chairman, out doing a broadcast round this morning, being pretty pleased with herself, very keen to stress. It's very unusual for a governing party. So I think from the Tory camp, in terms of the England-wide results, I think there is a lot of optimism this morning and generally a sense that this has been a success. But this is going to be drawn out and we're not going to have a full picture until Monday. I think where there might be an upset to come in terms of Boris Johnson is Scotland. Now, these results are going to come through this afternoon and through till Saturday morning. So you might not know until, tomorrow midday where exactly we are in terms of the SNP and that majority. But in terms of, I think, what we're expecting, you've had John Curtis saying that it looks as though Nicola Sturgeon is heading for a significant victory in the Holyrood elections, but she could be one seat short of an overall majority. Now, that might mean that we have to wait overnight until tomorrow to really know if she's got that. And then I think the question then is, if the SNP were to fall just short of a majority, is there an independence majority? Do you have a situation where the Greens have also picked up support? See what's happening with ALBA. And then at that point, the government's problems are not gone. If you could, in a way, I think the worst case scenario for the government is that there is an SNP majority and there's also, perhaps Greens as the, a large base too in the Scottish Parliament, and you can say that there is clearly a pro-independence majority and it's beyond just the SNP, so it's harder to dismiss. But also if the SNP falls short, I think it's also problematic for the government if there is a wider pro-independence majority. And then we also are going to be getting the mayorals. I think everything we're hearing in terms of Andy Street, the West Midlands mayor, is looking good for the Tories. And I think also in terms of Ben Houch and the Tees Valley mayor, I think it'd be a very big surprise if he was not elected at a comfortable margin, because there's already anger on the Labour side that ultimately the Hartlepool election was when it was, because the fact that Ben Houchen is so popular means that they think people voting in that election, voting for Ben Houchen, were also just more likely to then vote for the Tory candidate. So I think if you look at the Hartlepool election, it does seem inevitable in a way that Ben Houchen has won that. And I think it's interesting, I've interviewed Ben Houchen just after the 2019 election victory, and back when you were allowed to travel around the country, this is pre-COVID, I went up to Tees Valley and you could just see that, I think when we're learning, I suppose, the brands, everyone talks about brand Boris, but Ben Houchen clearly is seen as a huge asset to the party in terms of the blue wall Tories. And he doesn't do things by the book. If you look at the fact that he has brought this airport forward, plans for the steel industry, which I think go against some traditional conservative thinking, and is seen as a blueprint, I think, for how the Tories are going to keep these areas. So I think that's one to watch.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, James. And we'll bring you full analysis of the results as they come in over the next few days. Thanks for listening.